everybody. This is Gary, and this is another chapter in the exciting saga of All Have a Beer and Talk, the only podcast that I know of produced in an undisclosed underground location somewhere underneath Portland, Oregon, where I talk about a couple interesting, positive stories about humankind's cleverness and inquisitiveness that I read on that great cat video delivery system, also known as the internet, last week. And I talk about all this in the time it takes me to drink one very special beer. Hey, did you catch the Oscars Sunday? It's been kind of a tradition in the iHabat household. My wife and I worked at an independent video store in the early 2000s, and the need to be informed as to what films people would be asking for the next day by watching the ceremony every year kind of stuck. We heard that friend of the show and Academy Award winner Tom Curley was in the audience somewhere. We squinted and squinted at the screen, and we might have seen his elbow. Anyway, I mentioned beer earlier. Since I live in Portland, Oregon, I have access to a nearly infinite variety of beer, so I have a very eclectic beer cellar. Yes, I have a cellar in my bunker. Turtles all the way down. To help me choose a different beer each and every week, that's easy for me to say, I use a device called the Randomizer to choose for me. And there it goes. This week, I have Wolf Tree Brewery's King of the Forest, a 6.5% ABV Flanders Oude Bruin. What is that? Beer Advocate defines Flanders Oude Bruins as, quote, light to medium-bodied, deep copper to brown in color. They are extremely varied, characterized by a slight vinegar or lactic sourness, and spiciness to smooth and sweet. A fruity, estuary character is apparent with no hop flavor or aroma. Low to medium bitterness. Very small quantities of diacetyl are acceptable. Roasted malt character in aroma and flavor is acceptable at low levels. Oak-like or woody characters may be pleasantly integrated into overall palate. Typically, old and new brown ales are blended, like lambics. That was a lot of information there. The Flanders prefix refers to the area of Flemish Belgium where the beer originated. The more you know. So, I want to drink this. Hey, Flanders, make some noise while I switch to the beer mic.
Feels like I'm wearing nothing at all. Nothing at all. Nothing at all.
Well, it smells very sweet and very full of alcohol. It is a nice, just a very, very brown color. Just like the very textbook definition of brown, the tan white head. Well, let's see how the King of the Forest tastes. Oh, the taste did not resemble the odor at all. It's very sweet. Reminds me an awful lot of lambics. A very fruity, almost apple-y kind of flavor with a little tiny bit of roastedness around the edges. Belgium may be the worst obscenity in the universe, but they make some really amazing, amazing beer. Yeah, you win some, you lose some. All right, I've got a trio of stories about the moon this week. You know, the one that's in the sky around the Earth. I love the moon. I love the moon. Are you ready to blast off? Woo, it's Space 1999 time. You know that moon up there? Pretty cool, right? But how'd it get there? It's been generally agreed upon that during Earth's early formation into a planet, a hypothetical Mars-sized object, which has been named Theia, partially collided with the Earth about 4.5 billion years ago. The impact threw tons of debris into orbit and turned the Earth back into a molten mass. Eventually, the debris ringing the Earth congealed into what we know today as the Moon. This theory was given more weight in 2014 when a study detected traces of common elements with different isotopic compositions than those found on Earth were found on the Moon, meaning that they came from somewhere else, possibly Theia. Actually, I think I talked about that in shows past. Well, throw all that out, lunar scientists, and start over. Gizmodo says that researchers from the University of California, Davis, and Harvard, led by UC Davis astronomer Sarah Stewart, have a totally new theory that was recently published in the Journal of Geophysical Research, Kittens. Wait, that's wrong. That's not the name of the journal. I meant the Journal of Geophysical Research, Planets. But they're talking about the moon. It's not a planet? Okay, whatever. They posit that the source of the moon was an entirely new type of astronomical object called a synestia. Not Sinestro, but synestia. For you word nerds and trivia night champs, it's an amalgam of Sin, meaning together, and Hestia, the Greek goddess of architecture. Together architecture. Okay. A synestia occurs when planet-sized objects too young to drink do what youngsters do, smash into each other. The resulting violence creates a mass composed of molten and vaporized rock, spinning so fast that it resembles a gigantic space torus. And I'm not talking about a Ford Taurus, I mean a torus, T-O-R-U-S. And if you don't know what a torus is, it looks like a donut. The synestia lives fast and dies young, on the order of 100 to 200 years, shrinking as it cools, with the vaporized rock turning into a liquid, then a molten solid, resembling a round planet again. According to the new research, the moon may have formed inside the synestia Earth. After the collision with Theia, chunks of molten rock in the synestia became a kind of moon seed, and as the synestia Earth started to cool off, the vaporized rock began to fall into the moon seed, which eventually popped out of the synestia Earth to become its very own celestial object, with its very own trail of rock vapor! Our model starts with a collision that forms a synestia, Locke said in a statement. The moon forms inside the vaporized Earth at temperatures of 4 to 6,000 degrees Fahrenheit and pressures of tens of atmospheres. The synestia theory actually helps explain the similarities and differences seen when comparing the compositions of the moon and the Earth. The moon and the Earth share several geochemical attributes, but the moon is missing volatile elements like potassium, sodium, and zinc. Those materials were theoretically vaporized and flew away during the synestia phase, taken away by the larger forming Earth. So remember, the moon formed inside the Earth, just like how the alien formed inside Cain. Chest-bursting moon! Hey, remember when I talked about PT scientists, that's all one word, plan to give the moon its own LTE network? Remember? I had a hard time remembering. Well, I actually have a follow-up story. Yes, this is one of those rare stories. A big FU! That's FU for follow-up. Mashable reports that PT Scientists has now partnered with Vodafone, Nokia, and Audi to make its dream come true, to use a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket to enable future lunar explorers to be able to sext and Snapchat on the moon. This is a crucial first step for sustainable exploration of the solar system. In order for humanity to leave the cradle of Earth, we need to develop infrastructures beyond our home planet, Robert Boehm, CEO of PT Scientists, said in a statement. With mission to the moon, we will establish and test the first elements of a dedicated communications network on the moon. Now, as you should recall, I recently broke the sad news that Google's Lunar X Prize, which was a cash payout for the first team to achieve certain goals in, on, and around the moon, ended with no winner. PT scientists don't care about that and are moving forward. In essence, it makes no difference to our plans, a PT scientist's spokeswoman said via email. That was a pretty ominous statement. Wow. We have two key technological partners on our first mission to the moon, and they have supported us with their specific engineering and comms expertise. The end of the Google Lunar X Prize is the end of a chapter for them, but we continue the story and aim to become a trusted transport and communications infrastructure provider for your future lunar missions, she continued. The plan is to deliver Audi-made Quattro lunar rovers to the surface and deploy a 4G LTE antenna from its base station. Nokia is providing what they call the ultra-compact network that weighs the same amount as a bag of sugar. Science! Once the network is active, the lunar rovers will tool around the surface of the moon, transmitting HD video to the Earth and communicating with each other. I imagine the conversations will go a little something like this.
Hey B, we're whalers on the moon!
I can't talk now, Paul. I'm driving.
And to round out my moon story trilogy, get it? Round moon? I have this story I read on Engadget. The biggest issue with space travel, among other things, is resources. You have to bring everything you need with you out of Earth's gravity well, and all that weight costs a lot of fuel to push into space. As we, hopefully, spread out into the solar system, it's vitally important we find ways of collecting resources in space itself, as opposed to dragging it all with us from the surface of the Earth. The moon may be a great place to experiment with harvesting the, quote, natural resources. A study published last year indicated that large quantities of water ice may exist in the moon's shadowed craters around the poles, which would be great, because that water could be used by future lunar explorers to drink, make oxygen, and also to make rocket fuel. Researchers at the Space Science Institute in Colorado recently published in Nature Geoscience that water may actually be all over the moon's surface, not just in dark craters possibly full of space monsters. You just have to mine it. To detect water on the moon, researchers use spectrometry. They measure the way light bounces off the lunar surface, which can tell them what its chemical composition is with a reasonable amount of accuracy. Now, I qualify that by reasonable because the moon can heat up enough in the sun's rays to emit infrared light, which can really screw up these spectrometry readings. The researchers at the Space Science Institute took India's Chandrayaan-1 orbiter spectrometry readings and combined that data with temperature readings from NASA's Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter to try to cut out the moon's infrared interference. The resulting data showed that water may be present all over the moon. Great! But in a form that would need to be mined and processed. Boo. The researchers believe they're observing hydroxyl in the moon. Hydroxyl is one oxygen atom bonded to one hydrogen atom, written as OH. And as you should know, water is H2O, which is two hydrogen atoms and one oxygen atom. So if you get enough hydroxyl, you can actually make H2O. So it's not as easy as finding giant chunks of ice at the poles, but this is good news for future space exploration. If ice can't be found, hydroxyl could be the next best thing. Speaking of molecular structures, did you know that hydrogen bonds are what makes the magic of paper possible? And did you know that this show's sponsor is Portland's only community handmade papermaking studio? Those two facts are related. I am talking about Pulp & Deckel, and its mission is to keep the art of papermaking alive with workshops, demonstrations, creating and selling beautiful handmade paper products, and working with artists in creating all styles of art through the medium of papermaking. Browse a rotating selection of papermaking workshops, inquire about custom orders, take an online recycled papermaking class, and check out all the amazing things that we do with the ancient art of papermaking by visiting pulpanddeckel.com. That is pulpanddeckel.com. Mention I'll have a beer and talk, and we might give you something special. Hey, you know what would come in handy while spending all that time in space and on the moon in the future? A flying brain. No, I'm not talking about Gore from the planet Eros. I'm referring to Simon, that is spelled C-I-M-O-N, because it stands for Crew Interactive Mobile Companion. I read about this on Digital Trends. Simon was developed by Airbus and Germany's DLR Space Agency, utilizing IBM's Watson supercomputer for its smarts. You know, I wonder how long it took for them to come up with the combination of terms to just barely form the acronym into a name. Must have cost more time and effort than the thing itself. Kind of like how heuristically programmed algorithmic computer became HAL 9000. Anyway, Simon will be joining the crew of the International Space Station, hitching a ride with German astronaut Alexander Gerst in June of this year of our Google Overlord 2018, as part of the European Space Agency's Horizons mission. Simon will be the first artificial intelligence ever to be on the ISS and is a free-flying 11-pound semi-spherical floating computer system with a monitor on the front, complete with a totally not creepy, quote, crudely drawn face on the display. Simon is designed to learn as it interacts with the crew, becoming more and more helpful as it learns the crew's faces and how they work, and totally not discover and note all of their weaknesses to become a, quote, genuine colleague, so says Airbus. With Simon, crew members can do more than just work through a schematic view of prescribed checklists and procedures. They can also engage with their assistant, Airbus said. In this way, Simon makes work easier for the astronauts while carrying out everyday routine tasks, helps to increase efficiency, facilitates mission success, and improves security. And it can also serve as an early warning system for technical problems. So, like, maybe warning them when the AE-35 unit is, or possibly not, about to fail. Astronaut Gerst says that he will work with Simon on three specific tasks, of which he only mentions one, a complex medical experiment where Simon will act as an intelligent camera. Nothing disturbing about that. Complex medical experiment. You know, I wonder what the other two tasks will be. Uphold the law and classified, maybe? Anyway, Simon will hang about helping the humans, and totally not killing them or turning them into its loyal Robomen army, until the end of its mission in October, and presumably return to Earth at that time. You are warned. Put away the antibacterial soap. Right now. Especially if you spend a lot of time on the surface world in the warmth of the sun. New Scientist reports that bacteria that normally lives on your skin may be protecting you from cancer. A team of researchers at the University of California, San Diego, led by Teruaki Nakatsuji, recently took a look at all the creepy crawlies that hang out on your epidermis. Yes, you are covered in bacteria, says Nakatsuji. The human skin has almost 1 million bacteria per square inch, he said. And if you were unawares, that is completely normal. Some bacteria is good, some is bad, but it appears when left alone, they manage a balance. The team cultured skin bacteria collected from volunteers, and they found that some bacteria produced antibacterial proteins when they encountered harmful bacteria. One specific strain of good guy bacteria, Staphylococcus epidermidis, also made something a little extra. S. epidermidis produced a molecule called 6-HAP that has a similar structure to a blood cancer treatment drug. The team applied a little 6-HAP to a range of cancer cells, and you won't believe what happened next. 6-HAP killed the cancer cells. The team then injected 6-HAP into mice with skin tumors every 48 hours for 2 weeks, and after comparing tumor size to mice that received a saline placebo on the same schedule, the mice receiving a little 6-HAP saw their tumors decrease in size by almost 60%. To see if the bacteria itself had the same effect, the team then gave mice one of two strains of S. epidermidis, one that produced 6-HAP and one that didn't, then exposed the mice to enough UV rays to give them skin tumors. I hope they gave them little UV-blocking goggles. The mice with the 6-HAP strain of bacteria developed 20% fewer tumors than the other mice, so hooray 6-HAP! Nakatsuji believes that this suggests that similar bacteria may also be protecting us from skin cancer, and the team wants to develop a probiotic that contains these 6-HAP strains so it can be used as a skin cancer treatment or preventative, and could potentially be incorporated into regular sunscreen. But if people keep using antibacterial soap, the benefit will be lost. Solution? Stop using antibacterial soap. Do as Nakatsuji says. You need to let the beneficial bacteria grow. As I may have mentioned in shows past, I suffer from anxiety. It's so 21st century of me, I know. It's not healthy, and I try my best to deal with it, but Business Insider says a tiny bit of anxiety might have a benefit. But just a tiny bit. A new study published, and I think you should take a drink every time I start a sentence with those words. Anyway, a new study published in the journal Brain Sciences says that a small amount of anxiety may help you remember things better. Researchers from the University of Waterloo assessed 80 volunteer students using the Depression Anxiety Stress Scales and were randomly assigned to one of two groups, a deep encoding group and a shallow encoding group. The deep group refers to what is called semantic processing in memory research. It involves how our brain connects words we hear to other words with similar meanings, which aids in remembering them. And the shallow group refers to shallow processing in memory research, involving the sounds and structures of language. The volunteers were shown 72 words overlaid on pictures that were either neutral or negative. The examples given here were a car crash versus an orange boat. So, genocide versus a green hat, or insider trading versus a brown car. Anyway, the shallow ones were asked to look for the letter A, and the deep group were asked whether or not the word represented an animate or inanimate object. The results of all this showed that manageable levels of anxiety aided the volunteers' memory, and they were able to better recall details from the photos and words. The shallow group was not expected to be likely to remember words, since they were just looking for A's, but those with high anxiety remembered words better when they were paired with negative feeling images. Great, but as always, there's a catch. To some degree, there is an optimal level of anxiety that is going to benefit your memory, said co-author of the study and professor in the Department of Psychology, Myra Fernandez. But we know from other research that high levels of anxiety can cause people to reach a tipping point, which impacts their memories and performance. If your anxiety is too high, it turns into fear. Fear tends to corrupt memory, and also leads to anger, which leads to hatred. But I digress. Now, the authors note that people may perceive images differently, like how one person's negative image could be perceived as neutral by another, so it's not perfect evidence of the link between a tiny bit of anxiety and improved memory retention. But it's interesting. In fact, in my own experience, whenever I start a whole new job, my anxiety is through the roof, and I tend to learn the ropes very quickly, and especially in stressful situations where I struggle to understand how to do the new job. I remember what to do when those situations arise again. Baptisms of fire, they only hurt for a little while. Did you know that, according to Earther, 200 people in the U.S. die every year after a run with an animal? It's true. According to a new study... from Stanford University's Department of Surgery, over 1 million emergency room visits and $2 billion in healthcare spending are attributed to human-animal conflicts. The study ran from 2008 to 2015, and the average death rate per year caused by animals was about 86 people losing their lives. Guess what animal did them in the most? Lions? Tigers? Bears? Nope. Sharks? Nope. Stings from bees, wasps, and hornets. Shark attacks only occur less than 20 times a year and only result in a fatality every other year on average, just so you know. With non-venomous encounters, the most lethal animals to humans are cats, pigs, raccoons, and guess what the most lethal animals are? Horses and cows! So, how exactly are people being killed by bees and cows? The study didn't say, other than stating that humans can be harmed by animals through, quote, bites, stings, strikes, crushing, or contact. So, keep away from those bees and wasps and hornets, which I'm sure you already do. But please, please be careful around horses and cows, too. Their kicks are especially dangerous. Remember, given a chance, a cow could kill you and everyone you care about. Hi everyone! This show is not only supported by Pulp and Deckel, it's supported by listeners just like you! I'm assuming you're just like you, am I right? If you get value or entertainment from this show, maybe you too would like to support me? You can always hire me for some voice and audio production work. I can do voicemail messages, mediocre acting, bad singing, and some adequate audio production. I produce this show, I produce Many Happy Returns, and I also edit the Paper Talk podcast. If you feel you or someone you know might have a use for the best part of my body, which happens to be my voice and my brain, let me know. Email me at gary@pulpanddeckel.com. That is G-A-R-Y at P-U-L-P-A-N-D-D-E-C-K-L-E.com. Rates are reasonable. And if you could be so kind to rate and review the show on iTunes, the more I have at discoverability will go up for people looking for beery tech podcasts on iTunes. And you can also support the show directly with money. If you enjoy my show each week, you can donate at least $1 a month to the show at patreon.com/ihabitradio. That is patreon.com/ihabitradio. Go to patreon.com/ihabitradio and become my patron. You'll be joining a very attractive and intelligent group that already support me there. I couldn't do without you, you crazy sexy people. Oh man, Belgian beer is just the best. That was fantastic. King of the forest. Well, since the beer is done, that means it's time for me to go. Oh well, until next time. Please tell your family, friends, neighbors, pets, plants, aliens, and the moon about the show, and they can find it on Google Play Music, on iTunes, on Podomatic, on Stitcher, and on Spreaker. And please send me feedback, story suggestions, and beer recommendations to gary@pulpanddeckel.com or on the Twitters and Instagram at ihabitradio. Or even on the Facebook at facebook.com/ihabitradio. It's time for me to go. I will see you in the future. Bye-bye!